Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. If you've got a good memory, this was one of the last readings last night. We'll read it again now. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them, "Where is the Messiah to be born?" "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what was written, the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may too go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Right, so we're going to ask three big questions this morning about Jesus and this Bible passage. So the first question is going to be, who is the real king? The second one is going to be, what is the king like? And the third one is going to be, how will I respond to the king? So look back at verses 1 and 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." Here, the Magi arrive and they have one object in mind. They have come to see the real king. They've come to see Jesus. They've not met him yet, but they know that the star appearing in the sky was bringing good news of the real king. And so they rock up where? Well, where you'd expect a king. They rock up at the palace and they go in and say, "Right, well, where's the baby king? We've come to worship him." They're not there to see Herod. They're looking for someone else. But it is no wonder, as they come in and do that, that the very next verse says, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Can you imagine if I rocked up one day to either King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia, or Kim Jong-un in North Korea, or Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei in Iran, and said, "Where is the baby king?" I would probably, at the very least, get locked up, and at the very worst, not make it onto my flight home, right? They are not going to tolerate someone else who has claim to power or kingdom over their kingdom, because they rule as dictators. But interestingly, Herod, while being disturbed by it all, and while Jerusalem is also disturbed by the news, he seems to know that they're going on about something. He seems to somewhere in his mind understand that, hold on a minute, I've heard something about this before. So what does he do? He gathers the chief priests of the people and the teachers of the law and says, "Look, where's this Messiah to be born?" And so he is sitting on the throne in Jerusalem. He might be the ones who has the scribes at his beck and call, but Herod is not the Messiah. Herod is not the long-awaited, much-promised king. He is not the chosen and anointed one of God. The visit of the Magi to Jerusalem is a bit like the visit of grandparents to meet their new grandchild. What happens? You, as a very tired parent, open the door to them, and yes, they greet you, but they're not there to see you. And it is very obvious very quickly as they move past you to catch a glimpse of the newborn. They're not really, you're there, but you're not really there, are you? Because all they want to see is the baby. This is what it's like with the Magi. They come to Herod, and they're not like, "Herod, we love you, you're great, blah, 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 but we want to see the king." They just come in and say, "Where's the king? Where's the baby king to be born?" The real reason for coming, the star of the show, is Jesus. The Magi have traveled all this way. They saw the star appear in the sky. They follow it because they know it heralds the birth of the King of the Jews. They believe that there is only one king worth all of their traveling, worth packing up all their belongings, saddling their camels or whatever mode of transport they use to get there, and traveling for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks on end. The one whose arrival was marked by the star in the sky, that is who they've come to see. And the chief priests know that. So when Herod says to them, well, where's he going to be born? They say, well, actually, we know. And they unroll the scroll of Micah chapter 5 and they say, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. Out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. So they know who the real king is. Herod knows who the real king is. The Magi know who the real king is. The chief priests and the teachers of the law know who the real king is. They know that the Messiah is coming and they know where he's going to be born. So the answer to the first question is, who's the real king? Is it Herod sat on the throne in Jerusalem, or is it the baby who's going to be born in Bethlehem? The answer is it's the baby born in Bethlehem, and they all know it. Nobody's denying that. Herod might want to get rid of him, we'll find out in a minute, but he's not denying that a baby king was going to be born. But those verses in Micah don't just tell us that the baby king is going to be born in Bethlehem. Those verses in Micah chapter 5 tell us what this king is going to be like, which answers our second question. The real king is Jesus, and Jesus is going to be the shepherd king. And that's where that sketch comes in, isn't it? The description of Jesus as a shepherd king stands him in complete contrast to Herod. There couldn't be more chalk and cheese. Herod, for those who don't know, was ruthless, but also a bit mad in the head. If there was any threat to his power at any point in his reign, or if he even thought there might be a possible threat, whether that was from outside or whether it was from within his own family, he just eliminated them. He killed three of his own children because he thought they were going to try and take the throne off him. He was crazy and he was brutal. He was ruthless. And that's why when we read later on, which we didn't get to, and we're not going to read, but the story of why Joseph and Mary and Jesus have to flee to Egypt. Because ruthless King Herod decides, okay, all the boys under 2 years old in Bethlehem, I'm going to kill them all. That's why in verse 7 and 8, he calls the Magi to himself secretly and says, look, tell me when the star appeared. Because he knows if the star heralds the birth of the baby, then he can work out how long that's been, and he can work out how to get rid of any possible threat to his kingdom. He has no intention of worshipping the Messiah in verse 8. No intention at all. I'll go and worship him, he says. No, he doesn't want to worship him. He just wants rid of him. Herod wanted the power, not so that he could serve other people, but simply so he could serve himself. Anyone who stood against him would be gotten rid of. And that's the same today, isn't it? Many rulers today use their power and their position for their own benefit. Many rulers think they're above the law. And sadly, those traits have also come into the church. There are leaders in churches who have abused their power and served themselves rather than serving their people. But Jesus is different. Jesus shepherds his people. In other words, Jesus cares for his people. Jesus will rule his people by serving them. And ultimately, as we read in Philippians chapter 2, Jesus will give up his life for his people. Maybe for us, as we think about Jesus as king, and that word king is mentioned, and we think about authority, it rings alarm bells for us because our experiences in life with various forms of authority have always been negative. Maybe we hear about Jesus being king and our response is to push back and say, look, I don't want a king. I'll just look after myself. I'll be my own boss. I trust myself. I don't trust anybody else. I don't trust anybody else to make those decisions, to tell me what is right and wrong. I'd rather work it out on my own. But the point the Bible makes to us is that Jesus is completely different. We can't take our experience of authority and project that onto Jesus. We need to almost forget what authority has done on this earth and think, no, Jesus is the perfect example of perfect authority. Look how he comes to the earth. He's not born in a palace, is he? He's born in a stable. He's not born in the capital city, Jerusalem, where the Magi go. He's born in a small town. He is not born to a wealthy and powerful family. He is born to a poor family. A poor family with a stigma attached to them because he's born out of marriage and Joseph is not the father. The first visitors he receives are not the social elites of the day, the influencers, but a bunch of raggedy shepherds we find in Luke chapter 2. Jesus is born in humble surroundings. Jesus, who is the eternal Son of God, doesn't come in glory and power, but in weakness and in vulnerability. Because Jesus is the gentle King. He is the King that we can only dream of, because we don't get examples of kings like that. He's the kind of ruler we'd love to have, but never seem to manage to find. So let's not let ourselves have experiences of human rulers and human leaders and let that tarnish our view of Jesus. Let us look at Jesus, who is revealed in the Bible as the King, and see what his kingship is like. Don't come with preconceived ideas and put them on him. Allow the Bible to tell you who Jesus is and what he's like. And you will find here that he is an altogether different kind of king. He is set up in complete contrast to Herod. In Jesus, we find a king who we can trust, a king who loves us, and a king we'll want to submit to, because we'll see that he always has our best interests at heart. So we've answered the first two questions. Who's the real king? It is Jesus. What kind of king will he be like? He will be a servant, shepherd, gentle king who loves us and cares for us. But that brings us to the last question, and it's a question we've always got to answer. How will I then respond to King Jesus? Look what happens after the Magi leave and head to Bethlehem. Read those last verses again from verse 9. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen rose and went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They worshipped, bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of frankincense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Jesus, in these verses, is shown to be worthy of worship, isn't he? Here are these guys who've travelled miles for weeks and weeks on end, and they have come to worship King Jesus. Did you notice, though, that both the Herod and the scribes had the opportunity to do the same thing? So when the Magi go there and say, where's the baby king who's to be born? Herod goes, okay, I don't like the sound of that, but I know the Messiah is coming. I'll ask the chief priests. They say, we know where he's going to be born. He's going to be born in Bethlehem. But who leaves Jerusalem to head to Bethlehem? Only the Magi, not Herod and not the chief priests and the teachers of the law. Herod, as we've already seen, is fuming. For him, all this is a red rag to a bull, because there's a rival king and he wants rid of him. Now, you might say, well, that's not quite my response to Jesus. You might not want to kill him. But actually, by rejecting Jesus, is your response actually the same as King Herod's? You just don't want anything to do with Jesus. Whenever Jesus is mentioned, it makes you angry, because ultimately, deep down, you know that Jesus is a threat to your little kingdom of self. You want to protect your right to do what you want, when you want, at all costs. And so, although you might not declare hatred for Jesus, by ignoring him, you're doing the same thing. What about the teachers of the law? They know, or claim to know, God really well. They study the scriptures for a job. They know exactly what Jesus is supposed to be like. They know the coming of the Messiah is going to happen. They know exactly where to turn when Herod asks them a question. They get the scroll of Micah chapter 5 straight out. But they don't leave Jerusalem either. They stay there. Surely these guys, of all the people, should have been desperate to get to Bethlehem. They should have been desperate to rush with the Magi. Hold on a minute, we'll come with you. Surely if they've been waiting for God's king to come, and there's even a possibility that he's arrived, surely they'd be straight out to check it. They'd be rolling up the scroll and saying, we'll follow you, lead the way. But they don't. They go back to their everyday lives like nothing has happened. It seems that these guys are so entrenched in their religious activities that they don't have time to see that their Saviour King has arrived right under their noses. And that's the pattern with the Pharisees and the teachers of the law and the chief priests all the way through the gospel accounts. They are so hung up on doing stuff that they think will make God happy that when the Messiah is stood right in front of their faces, they reject him. They've got such an idea in their minds of what the Messiah should be like that they've failed to see what he's actually like. Again, maybe that's you. Maybe you're the religious type. Maybe you do lots of good stuff. Maybe you're even a regular here at church. Maybe you help on a rota. Maybe you know lots about the Bible. Maybe you could recite lots of Bible stories. Maybe you're pretty good at keeping the rules. But have you missed that Jesus is the King who came to humbly serve you by saving you from your sins? Maybe you think Jesus is going to be quite impressed by all your activity, all your religiousness. Maybe he's just going to give you a big pat on the back. The Bible tells us that being nice and being religious will not save you because that's not how it works. Jesus is the King, and only by coming to him and bowing the knee will anybody be saved. But lastly, the Magi do then teach us how to rightly respond to Jesus, don't they? They don't worship Herod when they go in. They tell Herod they've come to worship the baby king. When they get to see Jesus, they know he is different. The star stops, they are overjoyed, they enter the house, they see Jesus in his mother's arms, and they bow and present their gifts. Their journey is at an end. They bring their most valuable treasures, and they are not disappointed. This is who they've been waiting for. They've been waiting to meet the king. And these guys are important people. They are probably quite wealthy people. And yet we find them unashamedly bowing the knee with great joy to King Jesus. See, for us it is the same. We need to lay aside our pride and we need to bow before Jesus. We often like to think that we don't need him. We like to think we can manage on our own. We think we'll be better off without him. But we won't. We need to come to Jesus and submit to him. We need to do what Jesus says because Jesus knows what is best. And when we realize that, we'll find that actually it is not a burden to worship Jesus, but a joy. Did you notice also the last line? And I wouldn't have noticed this if I hadn't listened to something during the week as I was preparing to preach this. The worship of the Magi continues as they leave. We think of their worship as the travelling there. We think of their worship as their bowing. We think of their worship as giving of gifts. And that is all part of it. But their responding to the dream that they receive and going back home a different way is also an act of worship because they are obedient to God's voice. They had a choice, didn't they? They could either obey Herod and go back to him and say, "We found him. He's in this house, in this street, in Bethlehem." Or they could listen to God's voice in the dream and go back a different way. Our worship of Jesus doesn't necessarily need to involve big, extravagant gestures. It might. It doesn't need to involve huge financial gifts to the church. It doesn't need to be about upping sticks and traveling to the other side of the world to reach a remote tribe, although it might. Our worship of Jesus is in the everyday. It is in the million and one little decisions we have to make, daily acts of faith. Choosing to obey Jesus rather than choosing sin. Choosing to tell the truth rather than telling a lie. Choosing to graciously bite your tongue instead of unloading both barrels. Choosing to go to the prayer meeting even when you can't be bothered. Choosing to chat to the people who are on their own rather than having the comfortable conversation with your mates. Choosing to turn down the promotion because it'll stop you serving in church. Choosing to move house to a less nice area for the sake of the gospel when other people would think we're mad. All the time. Everyday decisions to make a choice to obey Jesus. Every day is filled with them. Every day is filled with decisions to live for Jesus' kingdom or to live for our own kingdom. Every day brings the opportunity to serve Jesus. And because Jesus is the real King, and because Jesus is the servant King, Jesus is worthy of all of our worship, all of the time.